To all the wanderers,
wanderers,
free thinkers,
and throwaway kids,
welcome to the dumpster fire.
Let's get dumpster diving. Very interesting.
Tonight, as usual, we have Justin, our cephalopod liaison to the deep, where I just returned from. I was in Florida for...
Nice. How were my peoples?
They did not come visit. Yeah. I was surprised.
We're a standoff fish bunch.
Please forgive me. I used a bunch of squid to fish, but they were already dead.
That's sad.
I know. Sad. They gave their life for me to have a batch of fish. And we have our resident spooky expert, Aaron. Aaron, it is your season.
It is.
Yes, the embodiment of Miss Persephone herself here today.
Super happy to be having a moment on topside.
You have brought us gifts as well.
I did, from the garden, which is fitting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I hope you enjoy. My chickens send their regards.
Excellent. So, Justin, I did bring a peace offering from the sea.
Nice. Oh my gosh, that's hard.
It is a beautifully shiny octopus, adorable plushy thing.
Push the top in. He flips inside out.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Boom.
Oh, shit.
Oh, wow. And it's angry puss now.
He's a sour puss. That is adorable.
Yes.
He's a sour puss.
I saw that and was like, well, that's the one.
That's awesome. And you can put your hand in him like a puppet.
Yeah.
You can fist to the octopus.
Very interesting.
Fist the puss.
Creature.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I figured,
And now he's
I mean, you fist it, and he gets happy.
Or gets sad. Right. Depends which way you go.
Yeah. Yeah, that is fantastic.
Yeah, I saw that and just was like, that has to be the thing.
Thank you.
I'm taking that back with me.
That's fantastic.
He can be our new mascot.
He can.
Squig, the octopus.
Squig.
So, guys, I have a fun one today. A fun one, Mr. Ezra Brooks, 90 proof Kentucky Mash Bourbon.
Nice.
Now, this is a interesting one because it's from Luxco or Lux Row Distillers. Most of the ones they make, I've only had one of them, and that's Rebel Yell, I think is the name of it. But they make Rebel, Ezra Brooks, Davies County, David Nicholson, and a whiskey called Blood Oath.
Really?
And most of those I have not ever had.
Yeah.
They are located on the Bourbon Row, so they're in Bardstown, Kentucky.
Nice.
Yeah. Know really nothing about this. It smells fantastic. That's a good sign so far. Yeah, so this is a strange one. When I did the research on it, I was really surprised to find out it's a distillery that I've never really ran across, because most of them are owned by Heaven Hill or Buffalo Trace, one of these guys. So yeah, it's aged 7 years, charcoal mellowed. They have a couple different ones. This is Kentucky Straight. Then they go 99 proof, 7 year barrel strength, straight rye, and then they make one that's called a bourbon cream. And they used to have a cinnamon whiskey, which was real popular for a bit there, but I think that one's now discontinued.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, really a...
I really like some bourbon cream.
There's not a lot on this. This bourbon was made in, like, the 50s. Gotcha. So this is a modern bourbon. There's no great history to it. There's one cool thing about it. This whiskey was in the movie Leon the Professional.
Really?
Yeah, it's the whiskey that... the villain picks up when he's in the apartment. Nice. Is a bottle of Ezra Brooks.
Nice.
So, that is a fantastic film for those that haven't seen it.
Yeah, that is a good movie.
And the foreign version is much more interesting than the domestic version.
Oh my.
All right. Let's give this one a try. I drank very little during my time in Florida. So
sweet.
This will be first bourbon in a while. Oh boy.
That packs a punch.
It's sharp. It is sharp.
Oh my.
A lot of bitterness up front.
Straight is the name.
I can feel the hair growing on my arms.
Yeah.
That is surprisingly stout.
That will cross your eyes and not your teeth.
Okay. Yeah. Charcoal mellowed, they say.
Yeah. I'd hate to have seen what it was before.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a stinger.
I'll warm up for sure now.
I immediately got warm from that.
I will say, though, it doesn't have that, like, I'm going to blow fire.
Yeah, it doesn't have the dragon breath. It does mellow
quickly. It's all up front. It's got a sourness to it, and then that's kind of just mellows out and is gone.
Yeah. It's a pleasant warmness now.
The entire punch is up front.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. So then I got to punch myself again.
It's all aftertaste.
It kind of stings your eyeballs.
Yeah, when you first take it in, there's no like body to it, and then it's like this weird sour.
I just want aftertaste. Everyone to know the face that was just made by our local goddess here.
Yes, yes, we have found
it. We're leaving an offering for Persephone, yeah. not bourbon.
Yeah. Not this bourbon. We'll throw you some Maker's Mark after that glass. How about
yeah.
That?
No, I no. No, no. No, no. No. I see where we're going much. Here and no.
So little trust. Well, guys, today we talked about it last time. This is kind of the season for it. It's spooky season. So our resident goddess suggested that we go ahead and do a little more discussion on scary stories, scary places, things like this. I picked out three specific ones that I think are great. I have a little bit of personal knowledge of two of the three, and the other one I've heard about repeatedly. I know, Justin, you've got one that's actually in your family that you wanted to talk about. Yeah. And I'm sure we'll come up with some other stuff there. But we're going to leave it to you. Let's go ahead and open up.
Okay. So I started out thinking about my bucket list of places I would like to go, which then led me to started out with Eastern State Penitentiary. But then that was really trumped by Ohio State Reformatory, also known as Mansfield Reformatory.
Mm-hmm.
But then that also then made me think of Alcatraz. So then my topic for tonight became what a paradox I feel it is for prisons to be haunted.
Yes.
And how horrible. First of all, I find them fascinating, though, because these people are most likely going to be angry spirits because they were miserable.
Mm-hmm.
Also because they have been kept in these places in these states of high emotion for in a small space for a long time, so their energy has a good possibility of imprinting deeply into that spot with a lot of potency, let me put it that way. And it's just odd to me and horrible to think that they have to be stuck in the spot where they, you know, their imprisonment continues. So then I wanted to bring it out to the audience, because I don't think we hear from them enough.
Yeah, we definitely need a little more feedback. We get the best memes of any group that I've been in. But
we do.
We get a good concentration of those, but we need to start a discussion.
Yes, I would love so. Maybe I could start a thread or something, but we need to talk about what you guys think about this situation, because you can see wildly different results when you send in groups to investigate these prisons, which of course makes sense because ghosts aren't on anybody's, you know, dime, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it makes you think, are they really haunted? Or is it like a graveyard where some people just feel, yes. Yeah. Like you feel like there should be hauntings at graveyards, but I don't, why? You know, why would you?
One of the things we've talked about several times, just in discussion and on the podcast, is the imprint type of ghost.
Yes.
Where a strong emotion or a strong emotional moment or a violent moment gets imprinted in time and space.
Like Memorex, correct.
And one of the things that brings to mind for me, and when you're talking about haunted prisons, is solitary confinement, in particular Alcatraz. Alcatraz was cited something like 15 or 16 times in the last few years it was open for breaking the legal limit that someone could be in solitary confinement. 15 days is the legal max. It has been since Alcatraz was open. And there were several prisoners that got out of Alcatraz that talked about spending like 90 to 120 days in solitary confinement. When you're talking about spending 22 hours a day in confinement, I mean, literally an hour in the yard in the morning and one in the evening. And that is literally the only time you're around another human being. And that blows my mind. And I would think that would lend itself to imprinting. Like, how could you spend, I mean, we know that putting someone in solitary for that long will break their mind. I mean, it's almost impossible to not lose your mind when in solitary confinement for that length of time. And I would think that, like, I personally have never been to Alcatraz, but I would be really interested into investigating their hole. Because lots of guys spent way over the limit in their hole. Yeah. And I imagine that happened across the United States. I can't imagine that that was just confined to Alcatraz. And you've got stories like from Chateau d'If in France, when with their political prisoners putting these guys in solitary for decades. And Count of Monte Cristo touches on that.
Well, Eastern State, actually, it's funny you mention that, because Eastern State was built to be that way. Really? So it was one of the first penitentiaries where you actually were there to reform. Mm-hmm. You were there to learn penance rather than to be punished.
Yeah.
But really, they made the worst system
yeah.
ever, because yeah. the walls were like, I don't know, feet thick.
Yeah.
The rules were silence. You were not allowed to speak.
Oh, my Lord.
They would even put leather on the wheels of the gurneys and anything that had wheels so that wow. they couldn't hear that. They would put heavy wool socks over the boots of the staff.
Yeah.
You were led in a hood with no eyes, so you could not see anything and nobody knew what you looked like. You were put into a solitary occupancy cell with no windows, and you had 1 hour in your own private yard every day. You never saw anybody else.
If so your entire experience was
Yes, your
was
whole
alone.
Existence was solitary.
That's insane.
Even in the medical ward, and they would funnel you food and medicine through a hole in the door.
And that's completely depriving of, like, sound, the sound of other voices, mm-hmm. the sound of even the wheels. You don't get to hear the outside. And we've proven when... I don't know if either one of you have ever been in a sensory deprivation chamber. When you're deprived of all your senses, your brain does, it stimulates itself. Mm-hmm. And you will hallucinate, guaranteed. You spend more than 15, 20 minutes in sensory deprivation. And you're talking about a place where these people are spending years essentially in sensory mm-hmm. deprivation. It's not total sensory deprivation, but it's enough to... I would imagine that would break you pretty
it's
quickly.
Absolute lack of outside world input, for sure. Now, yeah. the funny fact of Eastern State, though, is that they did have heat and plumbing for really? Each cell
at a
time when the White House didn't even have indoor plumbing.
Yeah.
So, I guess, hey,
funny,
that's a bonus. But.
How Silver lining. Many awful situations we create with the idea of righteousness. I mean, mm-hmm. we're going to fix these people, and we make the most horrible place ever.
Yeah, we won't even go into... Earth. So, back to your point, though, if that... Solitary would cause you to imprint even more.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense because your energy is not being put into another person or an interaction
yeah.
with another person or anything like that.
And
one of the overwhelming results of investigations at Eastern State Penitentiary is silence.
Really?
In a place where there shouldn't necessarily be silence because it's an abandoned prison, you know,
yeah.
there should be rats and
yeah.
who knows, raccoons, other things living within it, but it's this
silent.
Overwhelming silence.
And it's like the silence itself is imprinted on the place.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's crazy.
That's been a theme. Right. Even with your experiences, like the lack of sound.
Yeah.
With these strange experiences.
Yeah. Yeah.
But really yours aren't supernatural, but they kind of run the same vein.
Yeah. Yeah.
And mine, too. When I was with Toots down at the reservoir, it was that was the first thing that stood out to me. It was deadly silent. I was like, where's the crickets?
And I think anyone who's spent any time in the woods has had that moment where the woods just went silent.
It's insane.
It is such a...
Well, it's ingrained in us to know that that is a sign of danger.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. a sign
because
of danger.
Because when everything goes
problem.
Quiet, it's because that they know there's
that
something
That means there's a jaguar
afoot. Something's
you.
Afoot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you'll hear that one soul bird that's flying away, like warning all the other
uh-huh.
birds, does that very loud caw to it's that warning. And that's always an interesting feeling when that one bird finally breaks the silence. But yeah, silence is, I think there's something to be said for supernatural experience and silence. I think it was... Rage Against the Machine said silence can be deadly, sort of like a slit wrist.
Very random fact about Alcatraz. It was the Diaz brothers. I think it was Nick. They said you couldn't swim from Alcatraz to the shore, and he's like, I can do it, and did
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, he did it without issue.
Yeah.
Wow.
He's also a freak of a human being, especially.
Yeah.
I mean, he's getting up there in age now, but...
Yeah. They actually think three guys did escape Alcatraz.
Yeah.
That they successfully, there were sightings of them in San Francisco.
Right.
They think they made it and lived lives.
And probably the best way for the politics of the time to handle that was to go, nope, they died.
Yeah, denied.
Just ignore you.
Yeah. Well, and I think they're pretty certain that for sure one of them did. Frank, I can't remember his last name. And the other two, they're not so sure, but he was definitely seen multiple times afterwards.
He actually came forward in the 70s or 80s claiming to be someone, and there had been another person that had come forward that turned out to be false, that they were just old and decided they wanted to be famous for a minute. But then later, a guy, after seeing an article about the fake one, came forward and was like, no, that was me. Like, that was really me. I was there.
Yeah.
I think some of the most disturbing EVPs are picked up in prisons, personally.
Well, it's a place of violence. It's a place of depression and despair. I would imagine that imprinting happens every day in prison. I would imagine if it's a fact that imprinting does happen, that would be a place I would vote for it to happen.
The vastness and a weird, like, the layout of all prisons are these open, like, corridors and dead ends and things that lend themselves to that as well. So I think that's part of it too. That's why, you know, the sanitariums, the old hospitals too, tend to be where there's a connection that people think of, like, this is a place of suffering. This is a place of loss.
I read a really interesting book, and I'm not going to remember enough about it to really speak on it. But what it was about was the guy who designed what we view the normal design of a prison now, with the center, the, like, watching station in the center of the building, with a ring around, with concentric rings around it. He was an architect, and he kind of went nuts after creating our modern prisons. Like, it kind of ate at him once he realized what he had done.
It's kind of like the trap of a soul or something.
Yeah.
It's in this weird layout that they usually have.
And they've proven, like, with capital punishment, they've proven that when people get revenge themselves, it actually does benefit them. It lessens the length of time they grieve. It increases their serotonin and dopamine levels. There is a benefit for getting revenge. But when the state gets the revenge for you, there is no benefit. Like, the victims of the crime, let's say your daughter was murdered and that killer's killed, you not being able to kill that killer, you still feel helpless. You still feel that loss. But if you were able to kill that killer, you would actually see a mental, psychological benefit from doing it. So I'm all for capital punishment in certain situations, but I think it should be the victims or the family of the victims that do it. If someone was to harm my child, I want to flip that fucking switch. I posted several months ago, I think you both saw it, of the gentleman in the 80s, that, his son had been kidnapped and, molested and killed, and he killed the perpetrator as they were doing the airport walk, that he had gone states away and they were bringing him back home to be tried, and he's at a payphone hub and he just turned around as they're walking by, is on live television. I remember it happening and my dad cheering. I remember my dad was so happy, and it was one of those things they played over and over and over again for like 2 days, and then all of a sudden you couldn't find it. They quit showing it because he literally killed a man on live television. But they played it endlessly for 2 days. But my parents were like, yes. Like, if someone ever harms you, that's what's happening. Like, and that's the way it should be.
Well, even the physical structure of a prison, as far as, you know, the stone.
Yeah.
I think that also has an ability or a tendency to kind of suck in that energy and hold on to it.
The
dampness, the generally poor.
Yeah, the type of material, not only the type, but like the coloration, everything's drab and gray. And you go to a lot of high schools.
Yeah.
And it is so similar.
Like the institutionalization.
And it's that same idea. It's like they have to use coloration and material to drain the creativity from you so that you don't buck the system. It's kind of crazy.
Well, and some of the things, there's definitely two, you've got your imprints, which, you know, you get like your creaking cell doors and weird noises that are just part of the, almost the ambiance of the place. But then you have the ones that are actually intelligent hauntings. Yeah. And those are the ones, like, so there's a guy that, he's like, he's probably dead by now, but when he was doing this stuff, he was like 77, but he used to be at Alcatraz before they shut it down. Really? He was a bank robber, I think. So he had this friend of his that when he got out, you know, he's like, so long.
Yeah.
It was a pleasure knowing you and all this stuff. And so then when he goes back now to tour, like, he'll run into that guy's ghost.
He'll run into his buddy.
You know. So he reports.
So you know much more about ghosts than I do. Do you think that a ghost can harm you?
Oh my. Well, I think there's been way too many instances, and I'd have to think of one now off the top of my head for a source. But I'm going to say yes. I think they can. I think that anything that can manipulate the surroundings to throw things or, I mean, then therein, if you can manipulate solid things, which they can
touch you,
then there has to be a possibility for harm.
My mom was very into Sylvia Brown. I don't know if you know Sylvia Brown.
I do. I know who she is.
A lot of her stuff makes a lot of sense.
I know she has a spirit guide named Rose or something like that.
She was a very famous psychic. She was Oprah's psychic all through the 80s and early 90s. Mm-hmm. So she's written hundreds of books, and I think my mom probably read 90% of them.
Mine as well.
Mm-hmm. They're very interesting, but she believed that spirits, not only spirits, but past souls, ghosts, could attach to people. And she very much believed this. And she didn't have kind of a traditional view of the soul. I'm not knowledgeable enough about it to really break it down how she viewed the soul. But essentially, living souls can kind of absorb other souls and wear the weight of those souls. And she said, and it's people with things that, like, affect you deeply, like alcoholism or addiction, can, like, draw souls to them.
I definitely agree with that. My late sister was very much an addictive person. She had an addictive personality, or she was
An
addictive
well.
Personality, but also extremely powerful when it came to, like, contacting the spirit world, things like
that. All right, everyone. We just experienced the strangest thing that has happened to us here. Now, Aaron, the time you were here before, you heard the scratches on my wall and the random things going on like that. But as soon as Aaron brought up her sister and we were talking about the spirits attaching to potential alcoholism or, you know, these people, she literally said her sister was powerful, and I got a system overload, audio codec overload. I've never seen that before, ever.
Wow.
We've been doing this for, what, 20-something episodes
in?
Why now? I don't know. But that is the now second peculiar oddity.
Well, actually, that's the third, because remember that one, I heard a female voice.
You did.
Yeah,
in that one recording that you guys said.
And it was
very
clear once you pointed it out.
Yes, it's very clear that somebody says something. A female says something.
Mm-hmm. Well, we apologize to any spirit we may have offended.
But I also encourage you, please, to continue to interact with us, because you can't get more genuine than the things that happen like this, and I would relish it.
And this is the time for it. This
yes,
is when the veil
is
at its thinnest, and it's all about it's the time of liminal spaces, and we don't fear spirits in this group. We welcome them.
Yep, so that's a good way to put it. That's kind of the power of being a skeptic. Mm-hmm. You can naively walk into the lion's den, say there's no creature in here that can hurt me.
Right.
So, Justin, you brought up a little bit earlier about, you know, can a spirit hurt you? And that's the interesting thing, is I have to be cautious about what I say here. Disclaimer this. I have never looked personally into these files. These all came from coworkers. But parts of this are very public, and parts of this, we were actually threatened at my job at the time that if we were to continue looking or do any of these things, we could be fired. And that was a very serious threat, because we had a confidentiality clause. And what I'm talking about here is, I'm sure you all have heard of this. It was the Demon House in Gary,
Indiana.
Yeah. I thought about bringing that up.
Now, before the Demon House became the buzz of the streets, The demon house was the buzz of my office.
Really?
Now, I will not say who, but someone did look thoroughly through those files. And this person is, I would consider them a pretty extreme skeptic. And was basically laughing at it. And came out and was like, this is crazy. I've never read anything like this. What I can tell you for sure is that their recollection in what they read was that one of the kids climbed up a wall in the hospital.
Mm-hmm. Really?
This is not a person that would make this up or say this. Now, this story had a lot of staying power.
Yeah.
Because the woman stuck to this story. The Catholic Church did 2 exorcisms in English and 1 in Latin on the woman. They believed it.
Yeah.
They that child walking up the wall backwards like he did was witnessed by nurses, doctors, and police officers.
That's
a social worker.
So the interesting thing is that I'm hoping that this is in public domain and you can look that up. Before this ever made any form of news, we were talking about this and it was being discussed. We did at the time. I don't think anyone realized that it was gonna become such a big deal. Yeah. So when we hear, hey, there's a haunted house and Gary and the lady saying this, we've heard everything in child welfare, everything. Yeah. And so I can tell you that one stood out and that one stuck around. The guy that ran Ghost Adventures bought it or something like that. I forget the guy's name. Zach Bagans bought the house.
This is actually, you can talk all you want about it. Yeah. It's all public knowledge. He has definitely exploited it to the...
Yeah,
the four max. Corners, and now the house has been demolished.
He demolished the house.
Yes.
Zach Hagen has been demolished.
He actually developed an eye condition after staying there, so a permanent eye condition. So those big glasses he wears are because of his exposure to this house. Yeah, had them like basically wall him up in it for the night.
Yeah, he swore up and down that it was fake and that this was a classic like attempt to cash in on fame.
Yeah,
which, like an Amityville Horror type
thing.
And if
you're the guy that... That's what you're doing. Obviously, you're going to want to, you know, rout out the charlatans.
Yeah.
So I do understand what he was doing. I think it was honest. And he says to this day that there was something in that house that could do things he had never seen before.
Really?
And I don't know what that exactly means, but that is that's a quote from him.
That's crazy.
And he demolished the house.
It possessed one of his crew members to the extent that they had to make the guy leave their crew for good. And the guy's life seems to be traveling down a very dark path. I'll just put it that way.
Really?
Which, of course, is subjective and per your own choice. But, he just seems very dark. You know, total 180 on how he used to be.
So
it's funny you should bring that up.
This brings up something that I've always wondered. So I've always felt like, and I think anyone who's spent time... in the woods or a lot of time in nature, there are natural nexuses of energy, whatever that is, where maybe the veil is thinner or the energy is more powerful or it's connecting lines. We know that there are ley lines on this planet. That's scientifically proven. We know that because of the magnetic poles of this planet, it creates ley lines of electromagnetism across the planet. And I think it may be where these ley lines intersect. You have a nexus. But it makes me wonder, so if that makes the veil thinner or eases the ability to travel between these liminal spaces to other realms, is it the place that becomes, is it the house? Like, would demolishing the house get rid of the ghosts? Or is that spot still haunted?
So one of the people I know that was a very extreme skeptic when we all went to Waverly, and I was like, hey, man, there's some stuff going on there that is completely, like, it was crazy. Like, I don't know how to explain this. His theory is, he goes, yeah, well, there's places all over the world where the magnetic poles run together, and they'll make you see all kinds of crazy stuff. He was very matter-of-fact about it. I don't know if he'd researched that or if that was
I think that you're both right, if I can.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's the case with Waverly. Waverly is charged by the sheer amount of death and suffering that happened there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The building materials itself, that's what I feel has caused Waverly to be what it is. However, yes, there are places that even though you demolish
the house.
The structure.
Whatever. Yeah.
My parents' property is that way.
Yeah.
Lots of really bad things happened back in the day when that house was, that property was all one huge farm. Mm-hmm. And so even though you get rid of the structures, it's that place.
Yeah.
That is tainted because the structures that used to be there are no longer there either. So you don't know what places used to be like an inhabited structure, what weren't. But then you also have places like where I used to live in Butlerville. That place was a... So there's some belief systems that would say that you call them ley lines or you call them places that are like a focal point of magnetic energy, but they're rivers of energy that run through the earth.
Yeah.
And so those are areas where the rivers come close to the surface.
Yeah.
So like, I feel like that was the case over in Butlerville.
I get you.
I feel actually that there is a triangle, almost like the Bermuda Triangle, in this area. And if you just think about it, I'm going to lay this out for you. So if it's like between Versailles, Butlerville, and midway to Madison on 421.
Yeah.
It is, and even this back road area here between here and San Jacinto.
Yeah.
It is this black hole. Yeah. You drive into it and your overall demeanor just crashes.
Yeah.
It is just a bad space, and I feel like it is an area of energy that is—it's a high energy, but not in a good way.
Yeah.
And I think there's places like that all over the world. The Japanese forest, where everybody goes to suicide, places like that.
Yeah. Why I ask that question is because there is a family farm in my mom's side of the family that is still currently in my family that. It's been in the family. It was built, I believe, like 245 years ago. It's been in our family for about 200. I think last year made 200 years that it's been in our family. The original house was purposely burnt down by my uncle. He did not admit that till a decade later that he purposely burned it. Every person I know that lived in that house, my mother being one of them, her five siblings all grew up in that house, and now my uncle and all his four children all grew up in that house. Every one of them have a different haunting, something completely different from the next. And some seem attached to the house, and others seem attached to the land. And the thing is, we know that was used, and it is perfectly... The lay of the land, it is an island unto itself. It's surrounded on three sides by a bend in the Muscatatuck River. Across the river is a giant bluff that is Muscatatuck Park.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which is a perfect hunting ground.
Which is probably limestone.
Yeah, you run herds off the bluff, and then you have all your hunters on the other side of the river, and you just pick off what...
Yeah.
Survived the fall. And we know it was used like that for thousands of years. I mean, I was talking earlier, IU, all through the 80s and 90s, would pay my uncle for digging rights on the farm. He would only let them dig, and it's 150 acres. I think he let them use 20 acres. But they found literally, it was mostly, the most modern tribe they found was Shawnee, but most of it was Paleolithic Indian artifacts. I have a stone axe head in my house right now. I have a stone, what looks to be some sort of butchering stone.
Like a scraper.
Like a hide scraper. In my house right now that came from the farm. And we know that that area has been used specifically for a sacred hunting ground. And we found all kinds of religious artifacts from the Paleolithic era, like carved skulls of deer and stuff, like scrimshawed skulls and bones.
Yeah.
That's definitely an exercise in some form of religion. And it makes me think that the farm is a nexus of some sort.
Surrounded by water as well, which is a huge thing.
Which we've proven that water, just being around the ionization that moving water creates, changes your brain waves, it changes your heartbeats. I mean, it's crazy the effect that has on the human body. And I would think the effect that has on reality.
So in that case, you kind of have to wonder which came first, the chicken or the egg.
Yeah.
Because that's the place one of the is, a, I've is a spot, a source of power, or the spot of, it's like a spot of power.
Yeah.
And then they're praying to it because, of course, they're going to play. They're going to go to these areas where
they're drawn. Where
they're hunting. They're yeah. hunting.
Yeah.
And it's connected to their food source. They're going to be asking their deities, whatever, whichever yeah. ones they might be at the time.
Yeah.
You know, for aid in their.
Yeah, in their hunt.
In their hunt.
Yeah.
And it all just kind of.
Kind of blends together. Kinds of,
yeah, it, makes it blends you wonder, together. Is did, it the did the spirit, spot draw them?
Yeah, or did they make the spot?
Did they energize the spot?
Yeah.
And or is it a combination of both?
It, and most likely, knowing what I know about life and reality, it's probably a combination of both and
I
then
agree.
Some.
I
and
agree.
Some factor we don't know. Because
yeah.
I think if you could take everything about reality that humans don't know, it would fill up the tank a lot faster than what we do know.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I think we know a very small fraction. Our senses, I mean, just the spectrum of light, we only pick up a third yeah. of the light that directly impacts our body.
And all I can think about right now is a fictional reference because, you know, we all know, or maybe you don't, but now you do. I'm a huge Stephen King addict.
Yeah.
And I just keep thinking about the... Pet Cemetery.
Yeah.
The ground beyond yeah. it where yeah. they where he buries everything.
Yeah.
And they in the book they talk about how that area would draw people. And if mm-hmm. if nobody was being drawn to it, it would reach out. You know, mm-hmm. it would go out like
and
probably it reached out and told Judd to bring the creeds into
it. Something
the,
that's kinda happened at the farm. Like my mom talked several times that if she went months without visiting the farm, she would start having dreams about the farm, like all of her dreams. And she was like, and they didn't feel like normal dreams. She was like, I've always struggled with remembering my dreams, but these dreams would be like imprinted in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Like I would wake up and couldn't shake the dream. And when you read anyone that does anything to do with dreams, any psychic, they'll all tell you that that is a vision. That is not a dream. That is a direct connection to something beyond. And she was like, it was like the farm calling me back home.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I went 2 or 3 months without visiting, like, the farm wanted me there. But her spirit, it's so funny because several of my cousins, who I know their hauntings the best because I grew up with them, were very demonic and evil and scary. My mom's was benevolent. She had the only ghost she ever physically saw. And she grew up with this ghost. It was a daily experience seeing this ghost. Mm-hmm. It was a little old lady who would gently tug on her toes to wake her up and tell her where not to go on the farm that day. She would always refer to a him. She would say, don't go to the cellar today. He's really mad. Don't go to the cellar. And she's like, I always listen to her.
So
always.
we talked about this a while back, and one of our mutual friends, I was discussing this with her, and she was sitting on that couch and got this like pale white look and said, well, growing up between the ages of 5 to 8, I would see a little girl in our house.
Really?
And the house, I was thinking about this earlier, there's a saying around here that you never build a house on the foundation of a house that burned, it'll burn again.
I have actually a story about that.
She said that that house had multiple random weird house fires.
Yeah.
And that she did not understand that that was strange until later in life because you're a kid.
Yeah.
And
I accept things.
This is one of the most like straightforward, honest people I know.
Yeah.
And I will see if I can get her to come and talk a little bit about that.
That would be
yeah,
awesome.
It's very similar, though. She said the little girl would stand in a doorway, and yeah. she'd see her, and always thought it was weird she was there, and she'd walk around her.
Yeah.
And, like, walk around the house, because she felt like she wasn't supposed to go in the kitchen or wherever she stood.
Yeah.
I'll get the full story from her, but...
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was a weird thing. I never expected that from this person.
So, in Comiskey, my entire life, there was an abandoned house,
mm-hmm.
and it looked fairly modern. Well, apparently that house had burnt down no less than 3 times, and they kept on rebuilding on the exact same foundation.
Yep.
I always called it the house of no closets. There was no mystery about this house. All of us, by the time I was a teenager, we were in it every weekend doing whatever bad kids do in the house and destroying it further.
What is that? Because I wouldn't know.
Yeah, but But yeah, so there was no mystery to it. But I realized one day I was just partaking inside the house and wandering around. And I realized that there were literally no closets in the house because they had never gotten that far in the construction before it burnt down.
Wow, yeah, you got to give that up and move on.
Yeah, and it stood for, I think it did not get tore down. What was there didn't get tore down until I was in my 30s, so it's been within the last decade. And it was there when I was a small child. It was one of the first abandoned houses I ever went into. My dad was like, come check out this house. My dad liked abandoned houses. So. Mm-hmm.
I do want to document this just for, in case there is anything that's been picked up in this recording, since we've had some stuff go on, that there are some sounds of a saw running across the street that you might hear intermittently. Mm-hmm. And also there's
a dragon
in the background scratching. Yeah. So those things are explained. Just FYI. The
dragon was eating his dead skin.
Was he?
Uh-huh.
He needs some greens.
Crunchy. Yeah,
it's fed.
He was, I was watching him do it. It was pretty eerie.
Well,
I believe it was actually down here, the one I was watching eat their dead
skin. Yeah, that's a different guy.
Yeah.
Many of our listeners may know of the Tunnel Mill. Yeah. The ruins.
Yep. Yeah.
I don't know about you guys, but when I walk through the Tunnel Mill tunnel, there's definitely a presence there.
Mm-hmm. When I was a kid, I was absolutely convinced that I had been transported back in time every time I walked through it to the forest side. Every time I walked through, I was always convinced I would see a dinosaur. Always. Oh. For years as a child, I literally felt like it was a portal to the Jurassic period or whatever. I don't know why, but I fully believed it. And I remember being so disappointed that the dinosaurs didn't come. I didn't stop believing that I was transported in time. I just felt like the dinosaurs weren't coming.
They happened to be grazing elsewhere at the moment. Yeah.
You didn't catch them that time. Yeah. So, random, that is Smokey Joe's favorite place ever.
Really?
He will go down there, and we won't let him go to the quarry side, where it's real deep, but when we go under the bridge and go to the river, he is insane. He's a game dog.
He'll see fish
and stick his whole head underwater, and you can hear his jaws popping underwater. I don't know if he's ever caught one, but he'll come up and shoot water out of his nose.
That's adorable.
It's insane.
Yeah, there's definitely a big, dark, like, hulking presence
there
in the
There is something there. And for some reason, my childhood brain translated that. Yeah. I always felt something. I was always terrified.
My corals hate that. Yeah. They don't want to go underneath there.
Yeah.
Smokey does not care at all. He does not. It's like he's oblivious. He doesn't care. The corgis are way more perceptive, though, as far as that goes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's interesting you said that, because I remember a couple times, both of our corgis, Toots and Tula, didn't want to go under there with us. Like, we had to kind of chug them along.
Really, so they definitely picked up on something.
It's an eerie place.
Speaking of really picking up on something, this is the most active I've ever seen.
Yeah, I don't know
what's going on. He's very agitated, and I don't know why.
Yeah, he's like eyeballing us and like trying to figure out what's going on.
He's gotta be hungry. I bet you money. I gotta give him some greens.
Yeah. What's going on, guy?
He's like, dude, you've been here for hours. You haven't given me nothing.
You pick up on some spirits.
Hey, woman, you look like you like animals. I do. I do like animals. I just don't know what to do with you. Fur and feathers, man.
Yeah.
I do have a snake now. His name is Houdini. He's pretty cool. He's a vicious killer.
Has he escaped yet?
He did. That's because he used to be named, I don't even remember what his name was. I inherited him somehow from somebody who didn't want him anymore. And went in, thought my lights had flickered during the night or something, like maybe the electric had a moment, and his tank was everything was turned off. So I went over to check it out, and there had been a storm the night before. Well, I believe he actually climbed out and turned it off by slithering across the power strip.
Yeah.
And he was wedged in between the tank and the wall, and so I was like, all right, forget your other name, you're Houdini now.
I think it was before I actually had met you. When I was 16 to, I believe I was 18 when she finally died, I had a gigantic snake.
Yeah.
She was 8.5 feet long when she died. We measured her. And She was an amazing snake. I literally could wrap her around me and throw a hoodie on over her in the fall and go to bonfires and stuff, and she would put her head right on top of mine. No one would even know she was there.
What did you feed her?
What did I feed her?
Yeah, rabbits?
Oh, okay. Rats. And one rabbit. She was amazing, but she tried to kill me, and that kind of put a damper on our relationship.
You told me she would, like, lay out straight because she was sizing you up, basically.
Yeah, she was measuring me.
I'll never forget that story, yeah.
But she was...
Keep it in mind.
She was an interesting pet. She, I don't know, I had always felt like reptiles just decide whether you're food or not on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
And I still feel that way. But that was the most emotional reptile I'd ever been around. Like, she was moody. Like, you could tell when she was in a good mood and a bad mood.
Right.
Like, she very much had more emotion than I had ever given a reptile credit for. When she molted the first time, when I got her, she her whole energy changed. Like, that you could tell that was, like, a time she went and left the fuck alone. Like, this is my time. I'm rebirthing right now, you know? Like,
well, I think they feel vulnerable, so it makes it a little more irritable.
Yeah.
Plus, who knows what it feels like to shed your entire skin. I
would
can't
imagine
relate,
it'd feel good. I don't know.
Once it's off.
The whole point why I brought her up is because you named your snake Houdini. Well, Ezzy, she got out and got into a couch. It literally took 5 grown men and a complete destruction of the couch. I mean, she was an 8.5-foot muscle. I mean, she was stronger than 5 men.
You'd have to lure her out with something.
We tried. I bought her a fresh rat, and then I just had a rat in my house, like, because the rat got loose. And so we had to just, like, hack this couch apart without hurting her. And, like, it took 5 grown men to, like, unravel her. She had wedged herself and woven herself through it. She was so, she was a massive, beautiful animal, but...
I can relate.
I'm trying to think.
I'm a massive, beautiful animal. That's funny. So, you know, it's weird that we're sitting here so close to Muscatatuck because, and I say MUTC, but I mean it as Muscatatuck, as in the state hospital or whatever.
State school.
The state school that many of us either worked in or had family members
that
who did.
Literally 28% of the county worked at.
Right.
One
so,
time.
Like, you know, most of our viewers, or listeners, I say viewers, I don't know.
Have family.
Yeah, they got something. And I just guarantee that 90% of them have a ghost story. That place was so, so creepy. I only worked there for like a year and a half or something like that on Lincoln Hall. If anybody knows what I'm talking about. So many ghost stories. And so now I often wonder how it is for the guys, the military guys, if they're seeing things you know, how that's working out.
Your sister had amazing stories about that place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I bet it did.
She, I don't remember any specific ghost stories, but just some of the things she dealt with there.
Yeah.
Absolute insanity.
It was just a horrible place.
It was poorly ran with some... And it was before, we still don't have a good grasp on behavior and what causes it, but we even had less of a grasp in the 90s and early 2000s, and just some of the things she dealt with as, how much do you think she weighed? Next to nothing.
Oh, yeah, like 110.
Yeah, and
at her heaviest weight.
Having to deal with a very angry... man who's 6 foot tall and 300 pounds and like breaking things. And
yeah, they
she
had
has
a guy,
to restrain him.
PRV-6 out there was where they wanted me to start when we were going to come on because it was the rough unit, like they put it. And most of the people there were fine, but they had 3 or 4 of them that were just completely dangerous. One of the guys threw a dresser through a wall.
That's insane.
He ripped a drinking fountain off the wall. And he ripped a girl's scalp off.
Wow.
Not on purpose. The guy was not malicious. He just was very much...
He was like Lenny from Of Mice and Men.
Exactly. A little more aggressive. But he threw a woman I knew into the wall and messed her back up. She had to actually get some stuff done to it. And she said it was really unpredictable. Like, he could have a great day and everything would be fine.
That's exactly what your sister told me. Mm-hmm. The gentleman in question, it might even be the same guy.
I firmly believe that a lot of them were influenced
By spirits,
too. Well,
this is the thing.
I have a few instances of that.
We call mental illness, once upon a time, in almost every tribal society, was the shaman. Yeah. Hallucinations may not be hallucinations. Right. They may be someone who can just see past the veil.
Right. Or like people when they're dying. Yeah. If someone is in a lingering death, you know, old age, mm-hmm. dementia, whatever, they have these moments of clarity. And I've been a nurse forever, since like Methuselah, and
yeah.
I've resided over so many deaths I couldn't even begin to tell you.
Lady Death for a while?
Probably behind my back, I wouldn't doubt it. But and it is just an overwhelming amount of people who see their loved ones come back, who yeah. recount them to you with such
yeah.
depth and clarity and deep. I mean, just it's yeah. so certain that I've just come to accept that as the facts. I do think we're collected.
This is actually fictional, but one of my very favorite books. It's widely hilarious and poignant. I know I've let you borrow it. It's called A Dirty Job by Christopher Moore. There's this scene. It's all about a beta male who's full of anxiety and frightened of the world, finds out that he is, in fact, a Grim Reaper, essentially. And he is a death merchant. And he's visiting, when he's in death merchant mode, he's supposed to be completely invisible. Well, he's visiting this little old lady who's in a home, or she's been sent home to die. And, why can't I think? The nurses that do in-home care when
hospice.
They're from hospice.
Yeah.
Hospice nurses are there. And he writes this beautiful chapter of... She can see him, and she's not supposed mm-hmm. to be able to. And she's just explaining what it's like to die to him. And it brings a... You know, it makes my allergies act up a little bit.
a little misty.
I've reread this book probably 10 times, and every time that... And he gives a great ode to the hospice nurses in that chapter. I really think that was written from some experience he's had or someone he's talked to. I feel that way about his characters. His characters feel very real. Like, they feel like you could touch them.
And, I definitely feel like there's... I mean, you can definitely tell when the human spirit leaves and...
Yeah.
I had this one instance in all my long career of being a nurse. There was only one person that her spirit stuck.
Really?
She, without divulging details, she had this little thing she would do because she died of Alzheimer's or from, you know, complications thereof.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nobody dies from Alzheimer's. It's always other things like you've, you know, yeah. whatever. So she would often make this noise. That was her
yeah.
noise.
Yeah.
All the time. And so when she passed, her family was all at the bedside with her, you know, and she had this vast family. They were Catholic and she would not leave.
Really?
So you know, there's stuff you do to a body when it passes and you take care of it and you clean it up and get it ready and you call the coroner the funeral home and they come and get them and all this. So I called up Dove and Sharp because that's who you call in this town most of the time. And
yeah,
I let them know and I said, I'll let you know when the family's ready. Well, yeah. The family, she wouldn't go. And so, yes, she's dead, and I know she is. I know all the indicators. There's no heartbeat. There's
yeah.
no respirations. She's definitely dead, but her body stayed warm.
Oh, wow.
And pliant. And her... She was there.
Never rigor mortis?
She was there for yeah. a very long time. And
were you hearing her vocalization? That
no, no. But I just knew she was there. And yeah. I'm just like, you've got to go, you know. And I did have a very good rapport with my dying patients. And
yeah.
I know this sounds weird, but, you know, I am weird, so take it as you will.
This is why I say so many times I call you Hecatea, because that's what Hecatea did.
Well,
she
kind of Persephone,
she was a
where I go back yeah. and forth, you know.
She's a psychopomp. She leads the...
Yeah.
She eases people
well,
into
perhaps.
Death.
There were many, many times
yeah,
I would lay my hands
Valkyries
on a body that had been lingering forever and just let them know that it's okay to let go, just to go.
Yeah.
Just to be at peace and go, and then they would go.
And
but, you know...
That's a beautiful ability.
Not that I killed anybody. Don't come for me. I'm just saying that I let them know that it was okay and let them go.
But you did... I don't know if you feel comfortable talking about this, but you did know someone who did.
I did. I worked with the nurse
no.
that did.
Yeah.
I mean, we all
possible
talked about it for a very
killer.
Long time.
yeah.
And finally even got to the point where the surgeons were saying, I don't want her taking care of my patients anymore.
That's terrifying.
Overdose. It was crazy.
Wasn't it mainly like messing with their medications?
Well, it would just be weird stuff. And then finally, one of the people, I came in for my normal shift and I worked day shift. So I would get there at like 5:30 in the morning and, you know, the ward was crazy. The floor was crazy. Everybody was running around like crazy. And I worked on the surgical floor. So at the time, I'm not up on laws now because I don't work there, but if you had had a surgery within 6 months, that was a coroner's case. Now, did they have to do an autopsy? No, but they had the option to.
Yeah.
You had to report it to them as such so that they would have that option.
Yeah.
And you were supposed to seal the room and do not touch anything.
Yeah.
Don't remove catheters or IV lines or anything. You let them lay. Yes.
Yeah.
So I got there and everybody was running around like crazy and this patient passed. She did have a really rough surgery earlier that same day. But she was very young and should not have succumbed to that.
Yeah.
And they were ripping lines out and everything. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
This is supposed to be, you're supposed to shut this room down and we're supposed to post some security outside the door. And so we ended up doing that. But in the meantime, a PCA disappeared. We didn't see it for months. I said, you just mark my words.
Okay. A PCA is a
patient controlled analgesia. So it's that button that they give you. You have a remote. You can push it as much as you want, but it's locked out to only give you medicine every once in a while.
Yeah. It's completely placebo.
Yeah, it makes you feel like you're getting better, but you know, you're getting that medication all the time, but only every once in a while. So anyway, long story short, it did show up months later. Totally wiped clean. This is all fact. I'm not divulging any details that would cause anybody any kind of, you know, ability to track it down. But so that happened, and she... I don't think she's a nurse anymore.
And there was multiple cases that made you
believe. So many that we were joking about it as in a, we're joking, but you all know we're serious. Like, this is a problem. What are we going to do about this? And, and then it actually got to the point where she kind of got pushed out of work in a way because none of the surgeons wanted her to have their patients.
Yeah.
I mean, so.
It was so obvious.
Yes, it was so obvious. The track record.
That's so crazy.
I had a very hateful nurse at Schneck, which was a wonderful place otherwise.
Yeah.
And it was when I was trying to leave, and I'll never forget this. I had a bilateral hernia surgery. I'm a ginger. I'm full mutation, so I don't do good with opiates. I told him that. I said, I do not do good with opiates. I'm going to vomit with a bilateral hernia surgery. Maybe do you know how bad that's going to hurt?
Yeah.
And they were like, okay. So my doctor, who was Dr. Weedoff, he's wonderful. He's retired now. He did fancy stitch. I have no scarring from the surgery. And he put the biggest screen mesh they made in because he said, you're a big dude. You're going to tear him out otherwise. So, great guy. He actually knew this and talked to them about it and was like, give him fenugreek. He said he's going to need it or he's going to vomit. He already said that. I don't know why that nurse took offense to that, but when I told her that, she flipped out. She didn't want to let me leave. Weedoff had put a lidocaine pump in on both sides. I vividly remember her doing this because she's like, you have to walk or you can't go. And I was like, fine. And I walked around with my dad and made it around.
Yeah.
And I got home. The next day I got up and I went to the bathroom and I thought, I can't do this. I'm in such horrible pain.
Yeah.
This is unimaginable. It took me like 10 minutes to get off the toilet.
Jesus.
So I got back to the back room there, and I sweated profusely for a couple hours, and I was just like, nothing's working. I was like, I got to take pain medicine. I got to figure it out. She fought us over that fenugreek script, but left me with a script of pain pills, and my dad was like, he's going to have to have this.
Sense.
Like, Weedoff wrote it in there, and they finally got a hold of him, and he said, send him with that. And but I wasn't taking any of it. I was laying back there stuck.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget this. This was probably a full day and a half in. I looked over and there's a little alligator clamp. And I remember her squeezing that shut. She'd shut off that lidocaine pump.
What?
Swear to God, I flipped it open and I watched the air go through the lines.
Better.
And then I could get up and walk around and had no issues. I recovered from it.
She was like punishing you.
Yeah, she was very upset. She
I'm telling
was very
you,
hateful.
People.
And I'll never forget that because it was so different than everyone else I dealt with there. That's also the surgery that I woke up and talked to the nurse and scared the living shit out of her.
Really?
I was still in surgery. They were cleaning up. They were done, but not fully.
Yeah.
And I leaned over and talked to her, and she jumped and dropped stuff and looked at Weed off and said, "He's awake."
That's so weird. Because I'm a closet ginger, everyone, and I have woken up out of two procedures, too, and never really knew that was a ginger thing.
You guys have a higher immunity to anesthesia.
Well, we process it quicker.
Yeah.
And I get very sick from opiates. I'm real bad about the pukey.
That's so crazy. I was engaged in my early 20s to a lawyer who I couldn't begin to tell you exactly what she did, but she was like, law firms would hire her because she's a specialist with dealing with insurance companies and medical claims. And she made me never want to get surgery again. One of the cases she was working while we dated was a woman who is morbidly obese. She had started having severe cramping in her abdomen. Mm-hmm. And she kept on going to the doctor. They kept on telling her it was all in her head. Well, she went to a different doctor, got a second opinion. Well, he decided to send her to a surgeon to do an exploratory surgery. Well, this doctor does this exploratory surgery, and he pulls out two small masses. That was her kidneys. He removed her kidneys.
Wow.
Because of his insurance, the max she could sue him for directly was $1 million. The max she could sue the hospital for was $1 million, so that's $2 million. This woman's only 33 or 34 years old. She's literally going to be on dialysis for the rest of her life because she's morbidly obese. She can't even get on the donor list. So that covers about 5 years of dialysis. Like, it completely wrecked. Now, second case she worked, directly after that one, she literally went from that one to this one, was a woman in southern Kentucky had had an appendectomy. Her appendix had burst. Well, apparently, they can leave part of the appendix on purpose, like if it didn't rupture the entire thing, which I did not know. Apparently, it was pretty common practice. Well, that little piece he had left, 3 years later, swelled up and burst. Mm. So she gets another appendectomy. Well, the second surgeon, she had moved like a couple hundred miles away to northern, like Louisville area. The first surgeon had initialed his work inside of her, had sewn his initials
inside of her body.
And in open court, while my fiance at the time is asking him questions, he's on the stand. He said, "Well, of course I signed my work. I'm proud of it, aren't I?" In open court. That's some serial killer level shit. How many hundreds of people?
Yeah, that's some American Psycho stuff right there.
This man has been had been a surgeon for over 30 years or something. How many hundreds of people had he signed?
Graffitied?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's insane.
That's really not uncommon, actually.
Yeah. Well, this is my whole thing.
Even though it's weird.
Once you think about it, I wouldn't imagine it'd be that uncommon, because what level of ego do you have
to be a surgeon?
To cut someone open and say, "I'm going to fix you."
And you know what? I imagine I might have a bit of that ego, because I can imagine the high of actually fixing someone.
Yeah.
Would be like, it's just like when I would win cases.
Hero complex.
I was thrilled that I changed. I remodeled my own sink and put the plumbing back together.
Can you imagine?
So, I mean, to anastomose vessels and stuff, I can't imagine.
I'm proud of you though, hearing that. That's awesome.
My favorite appendectomy.
Let's cheers to that. We haven't cheersed at all tonight.
Pog the Builder over here. It's great.
That is awesome.
I should have my own YouTube channel.
My favorite appendectomy story, though, comes from one of Russia's first sites in Antarctica. When they were setting up that site, they had 7 Russian scientists and 2 surgeons, or 2 medical doctors.
Right.
Well, one of the medical doctors ended up leaving because he got frostbite in the first week. He left the operation. The second one, a month later, started showing signs of appendicitis. He did his own appendectomy while he had backups for everybody. He had 3 guys holding mirrors and a backup for each one of them. So when they passed out, the other guys, and he couldn't give himself any anesthesia because he has to be coherent to do the... Can you imagine?
No.
Only a Russian.
Only a Russian. They live in the freezing cold.
Yeah.
They live in the freezing cold. Everything there is just rough.
Well, I kind of feel like I can feel your wanting to wrap it up here. Yeah, I can tell.
Well, here's the thing. I have two more things to cover.
Okay. And well, I'm gonna finish my story about the lady that didn't leave her body real quickly because
let's do that.
I want you all to keep this in mind later on. So I even did something I've never done before or since in my career. I went and got a friend of mine who was also a nurse at the time and working to come and confirm. While the family was out of the room, she came in to listen to the patient's heart, respirations, to make sure. And she was looking at me like I'm crazy, and I'm like, I know this sounds nuts.
She hasn't
I left. Know that, you know, everybody always looked to me to kind of be the leader, but I'm like, I just have to tell you that she's still there. She knew what I meant. She listened. She's like, well, physically, she's gone. In the time that her family went out, before they came back, she did leave.
Amazing.
Was it something that you
I think she was just waiting for them to leave.
Okay.
I think
she was just hanging out with the family one last
time. She was with the family. They were holding her there. She wanted to be with them. But still, I called Dove and Sharp back, and at the time it was Alden Rudisill. Good guy, wonderful guy. Yep. All the Rudisills are wonderful people. Let me tell you what. Let me throw a plug in there for them. They are wonderful people. I don't know how many times I have had them help me out with people that weren't even their customers, but didn't have family, and I needed them to hold that body in a safe manner for me, and they did. Bless their hearts. Yeah. Anyway, I digress. So I called him, and the whole time he would have been transporting her back to the home, the funeral home. All I could think about was her, him driving, and in the back seat or in the back of the hearse, out of nowhere. I mean, it haunted me for days.
Really?
I mean,
did
days.
Did you ever discuss it with him?
I have never. So Alden, if you're hearing this, we can talk names. But yes, I thought about that for days.
That's
and it's haunted me even now to this day. It freaks me out.
Incredibly haunting.
Yes. Like, I was just waiting for him to call me and be like, Aaron, what the hell is wrong with you? You know, you're slipping, girl. But it was bad.
That's amazing.
All right, but that was it.
Okay, so I'm going to do the one that I don't have any direct link to, and that is the Hannah House. Has anyone heard of this?
I have.
Yes.
I've heard of all of them, so let's go.
I wanted to throw this one out there because you can get on the Hannah House's website. It is wonderfully laid out. The Hannah House Mansion. It's in Indianapolis, Indiana, and they have several videos of evidence of the haunting there. You can go there, you can investigate, you can do all of these things. It's really neat. I've heard about this before. Aaron, what is your take on the Hannah House?
So I sort of remember it from, I want to say Hans Holzer has even looked into the Hannah House. Mm-hmm. So from him, I love Hans Holzer, and used to read all of his books and everything, and that's kind of where I grew into. As I was growing up, I was always looking for stuff, and he was involved with them, I'm pretty sure. Are you looking it up right now?
I have it pulled up right now.
Yeah, you'll have to see if he was involved. I would like to go, especially since it's in Indiana. It's one of those places where I'm like, you got to put it on the bucket list. I want to say, did they also have a live feed cam that you could watch sometimes?
Now,
there was a house, and then there was also a library that you could do that to.
That is, oddly enough, that's the one I have experience with.
Okay.
That is the Gray Lady, and that's the library in Evansville, Indiana.
Yes,
thank
you.
Where Ella and Natty went to college.
Yeah.
So we have experience with this. We actually were there, I think it was around 2010.
For hours.
Yes, and one of the last sightings was around when they were in college up there. So it was a big buzz, like, hey, they had another sighting there. I don't know if they caught that on the camera, but if you go to Willard, willard.lib.in.us, that is the Willard Library's website. It is a government website, obviously, Indiana website, and they have the Willard Ghost Cam.
Really?
Yes, and there's a long list of sightings and people that have said that they've seen this specific person. They go all the way back to the 30s.
Mm-hmm. And they have a cat, too, that used to get people. The library had a cat.
Yeah.
So, yeah, people would see this cat and be like, I saw something, and it always gets debunked because it was the cat.
Yeah, there was a... Uh-huh. But the 2010 sighting was the one that I remember very vividly. It was really a big deal. And since then, I think there's probably been a couple more. There's been some investigations done there. They say that the place is haunted. I mean, they have a ghost cam. So,
yeah.
I mean, if you're doing something right now, you can go to a cornfield and have a guy chase you with a chainsaw without the chain on it, or you can do this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just where you're at. Do you want to be cerebral about it and scare yourself, or do you want to just be spooked?
When I was in high school, our high school library actually had a very thin, small book, and it was the top 100 most haunted places in Indiana. Mm-hmm. And so I visited as many as I could afford to at 17 years old that summer. And one of the places, of all places, was there was a funeral home, little brick funeral home in the middle of Paris Crossing. Have either one of you ever been there? It was ranked number one on their list. And I've been in it several times, but it wasn't open to the public. We had to go after hours, let's say. And it was incredibly frightening. I never actually saw anything, but the feeling was very, it was overwhelming. Mm-hmm. But I was also a huge fan of Hans Holder.
So one of the most influential books I've ever read, and it's a very slim volume, but Hans Holder had a book called Beware, This House is Haunted.
Yeah.
And it talked about like the Brown Lady of Raynham Hall, mm-hmm. and oh my gosh, the Drury Inn Theater ghost. Yeah. Many cool things. I need to find a copy of that book online. But so like one thing I liked about the Hannah House was I just have this affinity for like Underground Railroad ties, especially because we have so many here in this area.
This was the end, as Justin's discussed before.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
For many people, this was where
and the Hannah House being up north, that was actually like a real outlier, honestly. Yeah.
Yeah. We had a huge freed black, essentially town, just south of town. It's now technically Crosley property, most of it. But Rick Apsley wrote a fantastic book about it. It's in the genealogical department at our library.
Really?
That's the only reason he wrote it was to donate it to the county. He was able to kind of prove that this was that we always thought that this area was huge on the Underground Railroad. It was the end for a lot of people, thousands.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Which is, it makes a lot of sense though, because I remember my grandfather when he first moved to this area, when he first moved to Jennings County in the 1930s, he remembered seeing black and white couples, mixed race couples, Hispanic and white couples. And he's like, and it was no big deal. And he's like, that's why I stayed, because it was so accepting.
There's a very peculiar thing about Jennings County. I've gone places, and they're like, you're so southern. And but I'm not. I'm from southern Indiana.
Yeah.
Like, you go up north, and they're still saying Usins and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
They're half Canadian.
So there's something down here. Yeah, there's definitely some kind of deep southern influence that came into this area.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's interesting.
There definitely was, and I think that might be part of it.
Yeah, I think it probably was, and we should probably deep dive that and track it back.
Yeah, I'm actually, I haven't read much of it, because my brother's actually reading the copy now. It's called The Underground Railroad, but it reimagines the Underground Railroad as an actual railroad, and it explores slavery and, like, the Underground Railroad, but it does it in, like, a very steampunk, like, interesting, like, alternative history way. Beautiful book. Highly recommend. It just won a bunch of awards. It's a new book.
So it's a new one. All right, man. Yeah. Well, that's our recommendation for the night, guys. We're going a little long on this one, but you know what? This is the type of stuff we go long on.
And this
and
is the
we
season.
Had that weird, you know,
we had snafu. The weird, I mean,
we had a good 5 to 10 minutes of conversation that was solid. Was, I hate that that got lost, but we can talk about that another time when we talk about trans states and the different cultures.
I would
cultures.
Definitely like to have a discussion on comparative mythology and how it all leads to the trans state, like 90% of
what
mythology. Is based on the trans state.
The trans state.
Most what we would call mythology was a lived and felt experience for thousands, millennia. You're talking tens of thousands of years. It's just been in the last 3,000 years that it's stopped being so. I mean, think about when you get the runner's high or when you're working out and you get that high. Imagine doing that in the woods and it's not a big leap to start seeing faces in the trees. The dryads become real.
Oh, I can go
real.
On for that one.
The
yes,
nymphs
absolutely.
Become real. Mm-hmm. And think in a Paleolithic era, how often would you hit that state? When you're chasing down something with a spear.
We are persistent hunters. So yeah. The funny thing about our build is the reason we don't have hair is because we are very good at spotting something in a distance and chasing it until it's exhausted.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
how we work.
That's what our big butts are about.
We've got an exceptional
it's
cooling
system.
But I hate
that's
running.
Why,
I don't understand.
That's why we love big butts and we
yeah.
cannot
yeah.
lie.
Yeah.
I only trust those that like big butts.
Yeah.
Fat
bottom girls.
I grew up in the 90s when it was okay to eat, when the desired female form was like this androgynous stick figure, and I did
yeah,
not fit.
I'm
so,
so
I am so much appreciated. Yeah, me too.
Yeah,
and
me
that
too.
Was such a blip.
I'm a Botticelli chick. I don't go for the 90s.
For all of our history, curves have been beautiful, and I don't think it was any man that said that a stick figure is beautiful.
Isn't this the author that wrote Brave New World, though? Didn't he write another thing where in futuristic
yeah.
London, they idolized homosexuality to reduce population?
No, that's actually Anthony Burgess, the guy who wrote Clockwork Orange.
There
it's
you
called
go.
The Wanting Seed.
That's even better.
Which,
the Wanting Seed?
Yes, I highly recommend it. It breaks down politics in a way that I've never seen written about before or since. He literally shows political movement over like 100 years in London's future.
Yeah.
And it's all these different waves of fads and trends. And one of them is we're becoming overpopulated. So you start seeing road signs that say, do your part. And it's two men kissing. Like, it's
yeah.
Very, very strange. Anthony Burgess, I could do an entire episode on that man. He was a linguist, so every one of his books, he makes up his own slang, futuristic British slang. So you have to kind of decipher. He doesn't explain it. You just have to learn.
I like that. I like that. It's dedication to craft.
He's brilliant. There's actually a book that I am not smart enough to read called The Dead Man in Deptford. I've read the first chapter, I don't know, 15 or 20 times, and do not know. I know there was a murder. I don't know when the murder was and who was involved. And I've read this
book. He's British, I think.
Yeah.
Does he have any tie into the Tavistock Institute?
I have no idea. Okay. I know that he was a linguist for a very high-collar school, lingual professor or something.
Interesting.
I don't know exactly what you'd call that.
All right, folks, listen. We have coming up for you Justin's Trance-State, our deep dive into religious experience and just the art of being, and
yeah.
I have some personal accounts that I can't wait to share on that one.
Yeah,
we have our local Viking, Halesa.
Yeah,
we will have him on, and he's going to talk about conservation.
Yeah,
I'm very looking
Sweet.
Forward to
yeah.
that one.
Have you had mead yet with him?
No, we have the horn.
Well, when that happens, I would really like to have mead when we all get together.
We can do that. I have mead that was made by a local, and I am going to give
you
him.
You do
a
realize
shot.
They come from the same blood, right?
Yes,
no,
he's my cousin. Yes.
He's
yeah.
your cousin. Wonderful.
Yeah, they're all Viking stock.
That makes sense.
I don't know why sense. I've always surrounded myself with Vikings, but it's been this common thread throughout my life.
Protection.
Yeah.
I would like to hear from the listeners what you want to hear for your Halloween episode.
Listeners, spooky season is upon us.
I have a plethora of all the spooky, so you let me know what you want to hear, and I can speak on it.
Yeah, we love this season, and we want interaction. The whole point of this podcast
right.
is to get you guys interacting and talking. We want to create a community around this.
You know what we'll do? We'll even do an episode in costume.
Oh, gosh, nice. Yes. I'll
Let's
do
get dressed.
Yep.
Let's do it.
I'm actually going to be the Bride of Frankenstein for next Saturday. I'm going to go to the zombie prom. Mm-hmm. Actually, let me plug that for you guys.
Oh,
it's in Columbus.
Awesome.
It's a great time. This will be the third year. It's for a great cause for mm-hmm. the Litter Box Kitty Rescue. They have no idea I'm saying this, so, I mean, I get nothing from it. I'm not even involved
that's
with
how
that.
We, you
but...
know, guys, we get no monetization whatsoever.
Right.
So if you ever want to just send us money,
yeah,
yeah
we will take it.
Yeah.
I have a PayPal.
We will. Use it to expand.
I have a Venmo.
We will. I have bought 2 microphones. I've bought a mixer board and some other things.
And I'd honestly be happy to start a YouTube or a Rumble or something. I would be happy to be on camera.
There's something we've batted around. Yeah. And I think we're still pretty early in this process.
Right.
We're still,
I agree. That's cool.
Getting to where we want it.
30 episodes.
But eventually we would like, and this is something I'm stealing from a lot of other podcasts, is a Patreon membership where you pay $5 a month and you get some special content for the week.
That would be great.
Like, and we have thought about this because the conversations we have before the mic comes on are probably not for mass consumption, but the people that understand would probably
If you know, you know.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think it would be cool for us to be, we could do a lot more if we would Zoom together. Mm-hmm. Or FaceTime together.
I was actually thinking about doing one while I was in Florida.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But because I was coming back so soon, we just scheduled for today.
And that would be easy to, you know, fill out that exclusive content for Patreon members.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So guys, this is going live immediately after we shut it down. We are almost a live show at this point.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the next evolution. So
that would be awesome. And please let us know if you hear anything in the background. I will be listening closely.
Please do. Please
for,
do. Listen
for
to the old
anything.
Episodes.
Yes.
Come on, guys. This is ripe for
this.
The house is
ripe for it, and this time of year is ripe for it. We had some
the people involved
interaction going on. Yeah. Right. I'm no slouch in this department. I do draw in the spirits, so please, if you hear something, let us know. Drop a timestamp.
Hit us up the timestamp to at least the minute. So thanks everyone again. Listen. Throwaway kids, keep on dumpster diving. We will be back.
Love
Thank you
guys.
All. Thank
Stay
you
spooky.
All. Stay spooky.